news, science, the unexplained, space and the cosmos, exploring our past, our future, and the mysteries of our universe. Taking a critical look at reality and a journey to the edges of human understanding. The future is now. This is Micah Hanks.
From the high mountains of Appalachia and a bunker below ground, welcome one and all. It is the Micah Hanks program. Glad as always to be behind the mic, getting into gear and going in pursuit of the enigmas of our existence. Glad as always to be your host. And of course, as always, we've got a whole lot on the table this week as we begin to turn our attention toward not only events that are occurring out there in the sciences, paradoxes of space and time, confirmation of physical theories, but in fact, how scientists remain divided on the issue about UFOs. That's right, this has been something on my mind in recent days, and I wonder sometimes if we're even capable of having an unbiased discussion about the possibilities that UFOs may afford us. But as far as the UFO dialogue goes, the big news in recent days has really been coming back down off of Capitol Hill, as lawmakers have been telling us about a recent briefing. Well, they can't say too much because it was a classified briefing, but what they have said has apparently indicated that it has been eye-opening, and this, of course, all in advance of the forthcoming UAP Task Force report. So we're going to wade into all of this, and also efforts present and also in the past involving the move toward congressional hearings on the UFO issue. It hasn't happened before. We've come close. Will it happen in the days ahead? And in fact, what has Congress already been provided as far as information about UFOs? We're going to look at all of that and more here on this week's edition of the program. But first, I guess I should really begin with a belated happy Father's Day to all of you fathers out there. I was celebrating with my family and my dear old dad over the weekend, so that was always nice. Great to see the family under any circumstances, but I hope all of you out there were able to have a great celebration wherever you may be. I know a lot of folks, of course, have been looking out toward the Gulf, but even right here in North Carolina where I am, many of us are really concerned about the fact that we have a tropical storm, Claudette, that has grown more powerful in recent days, and it's actually right there off the coast of the Carolinas, as of today, regaining tropical storm status after a deadly race through Alabama, according to USA Today. They report that strong winds and heavy rains slammed parts of eastern North Carolina, and the National Weather Service issued flash flood warnings for the area. A high risk of rip currents was posted for several beaches. Now, fortunately for anybody wondering, because every time hurricane season rolls around, I start getting emails and tweets from you guys, are you okay up there? And where I am in the mountains, I'm far enough away from the coasts that usually it's not a problem. But I remember back in 2004, when we had Hurricane Ivan sweep through, I mean, a lot of my town, mountain town though Asheville is, was underwater. I mean, look, we've got rivers here too, and when the rivers overflow and there's an abundance of rain, yeah, flooding certainly can happen. And that was back during my days working in radio. I gotta tell you, there were a couple of nights that I'd been up there at the station working late, you know, coordinating with emergency services directors and law enforcement and congressmen and women, all kinds of people, as our entire state appeared to be underwater. And I'll never forget the feeling of trying to drive home later that night and Patton Avenue being a lake. I mean, police out there blocking off roads, and I'm trying to find some viable path home. At some point, it actually crossed my mind I might have to just seek high ground and sleep in a parking lot. But fortunately, I was able to get home in that instance. All of that to say, yeah, sometimes flooding can happen. It can really happen just about anywhere. And so, as goes without saying, any of you out there who may potentially be in the line of fire, please don't take chances. I know people who are like, you know, we're just going to sit and wait it out. If local authorities tell you it's not safe and that you need to take shelter, please heed those warnings. Don't put yourself at risk. So there's your weather update. And of course, I am always prepared, being in a bunker as I am. But turning our attention over to things happening in the world of physics, you know, one of the most enduring mysteries, really, of modern times has to do with black holes. And black hole area theorem, of course, being one of the key contributions of the late Stephen Hawking. This dating back to the early 1970s, and of course, an extrapolation based upon his understanding, his very unique understanding, of Einstein's theory of relativity. But apparently, there's been additional weight put behind this theory recently, even despite the great physicist in question, both of them actually, having passed from this mortal realm. And according to LiveScience.com, they say that indeed Hawking's famous theorem has been proven right, and this a result of ripples in space-time that were observed caused by the merging of two distant black holes. Now, a bit of background they provide, of course, has to do with Einstein's theory of relativity, which states that it's impossible for the surface area of a black hole to decrease over time. That has been an interesting point for a lot of physicists, especially Hawking, and this on account of something that has long interested me, because physicists recognize that it's closely related to a rule that appears to set time to run in a particular direction. Now, in other words, the second law of thermodynamics states that entropy or disorder of a closed system must always increase, and how that relates to time is that, according to Hawking and others, time, and more specifically, human perception of time, appears to function in a way that is consistent with the same way in which entropy increases. And again, I often refer to Hawking's writings on the thermodynamic arrow of time. That is essentially what we're talking about here, and, as Live Science notes, because a black hole's entropy is proportional to its surface area, both must always increase. In other words, this too appears to jibe with the idea of a thermodynamic arrow of time. So that brings us to recent research in which, apparently, confirmation of the area law seems to imply that the properties of black holes are significant clues to the hidden laws that govern the universe. Oddly, they say, the area law seems to contradict another of the famous physicists' proven theorems, however, and that being that black holes should evaporate over extremely long timescales. So figuring out the source of the contradiction between the two theories could reveal, you guessed it, new physics. You know, I'm really interested in the ways that contradictions arise in our models of the universe, whether it's in physics or astronomy or anything. You know, paradoxes have always really interested me. And we could really go down the list, but recently in UFO-related dialogue, I've actually noticed a lot of paradoxes and contradictions there too. I mean, the most famous apparent paradox, really, that's probably ever been offered with relation to the prospective existence of extraterrestrials is the famous Fermi paradox. And for anybody who may require one, a quick refresher on what exactly that paradox entails would be this. Essentially, Enrico Fermi said, it's very probable, I mean, it's mathematically impossible, in fact, that there isn't life all throughout the universe. If we look at our own solar system as a model, then with all the stars we see out there, I mean billions in our Milky Way alone, if those stars represent stars like our own sun, and they have planets around them like our solar system does, and some of those planets are habitable, even if a small number of habitable planets were found around all the billions of stars just in our own galactic neighborhood, then we would have to guess that there are going to probably be habitable worlds that also have life like Earth. And Fermi and others, of course, who have looked at these ideas over the years, have argued that many of those stars are older than our sun, and therefore if there have been habitable planets around those stars that have existed longer than Earth, and they possess life, and some of that life is intelligent, then it may be the case that the life on those planets not only is intelligent like us, but maybe also more advanced than we are. Now, how much more advanced than us might they be? You know, I think we have to recognize the difference between the limitations of biological intelligence and also advancement that occurs over time. Because we, as human beings, are essentially no more capable in terms of our actual intelligence capacity than our ancient ancestors were thousands, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of years ago. Now, what differentiates us is the slow accumulation of new technologies over time that build upon existing technologies and lead to advancement. But despite the technologies at our disposal, I mean, hypothetically, you could have taken a child who lived in North America in Paleo-Indian times, right? You know, a representative of the so-called Clovis culture from maybe 12, 13,000 years ago. And if you brought that child into the present day and handed them an iPad, I mean, generally we would expect that that child within a couple of months would learn to do anything that one of our toddlers who's handed an iPad could do. That child would adapt rather quickly. I mean, that's the presumption. And the reason I point that out is because in terms of that thermodynamic arrow of time and the effects of entropy on living systems and really all matter in the universe and other things that physicists recognize in terms of the laws of thermodynamics, something I've often wondered about is really the capacities for intelligence that any distant civilization on an alien world would have. It very well may be that there are limitations to the innate intelligence capabilities that a species on any planet may have, which are governed by the same universal forces that we are subjected to here on Earth. And so I've often wondered if entropy and thermodynamics might actually have a relationship in terms of the limitations of intelligence itself, at least as far as biology is concerned. Now, when we get into the world of computing and supercomputing and these kinds of things, that's a whole different ballgame. But, then again, who's to say that a significantly advanced civilization might not be capable of augmenting themselves technologically, and rather than creating artificial intelligence, they create a form of enhanced or augmented intelligence. In other words, they use machines to augment their own intelligence, and they're able to overcome the natural entropic forces on the human mind, or in this case, an alien mind. But anyway, I digress. The point is, even if aliens weren't necessarily any more capable of intelligence than we are, if they've been around longer, they would have had more time to accumulate new technologies, and thereby they may have actually mastered space travel, or even time travel. Who knows what else? And so coming back over to Fermi's paradox, you know, given what we understand about the nature of the physical universe, it seems mathematically likely that other stars would have habitable planets, at least some of them, and at least some of those would be older than ours, and therefore, even if they are only as intelligent as humans, aliens on those planets, if they've been around longer, they would have the technological capabilities exceeding ours that might help them get to Earth. And so Fermi said, well, therefore, it seems very likely that alien life would have, or should have, visited Earth already. At very least, they would have technologies that would be advanced enough that would allow us to be able to detect them, and hence why NASA and other agencies around the world are currently engaged in the search for alien technosignatures, evidence of those technologies. And yet, we don't find anything. So Fermi's paradox, very simply defined, was, with all of these mathematical probabilities regarding our expectations for the existence of aliens, where are all the aliens? Where is everybody? You know, what is the reason for this great silence? But what's really interesting in the current UFO debate is that although we can't say that UFOs necessarily represent extraterrestrial technologies, one thing that does concern me is how quick scientists are to write off that possibility. In fact, a little later we'll feature some audio soundbites from some scientists who have expressed such sentiments. You know, aliens couldn't be visiting Earth and UFOs surely don't represent those, and here are the reasons why. But when it comes to discussion of paradoxes, what's really interesting to me is the way that scientists who often accuse people who believe in UFOs and suggest they might be extraterrestrials, you know, skeptically inclined scientists often accuse them of projecting their expectations onto things. But when they are quick, the scientists that is, to say that these UFOs are not aliens, they too, all too often, anthropomorphize and project their expectations onto the argument. And it makes me wonder sometimes, is anybody really capable, any human at least, are we really capable of having a completely unbiased discussion about the prospects of alien life, its discovery, what role UFOs may or may not play in all that, and everything I've been describing here? It's kind of like, or at very least, it sort of correlates with another idea in physics, which has to do with the idea that an observer innately changes the dynamics of a system by the very act of observing it. And it causes me to wonder, I mean, can humans really observe the complexities of the debate over the existence of extraterrestrials and whether UFOs may play a role in all of that without injecting our own biases, beliefs, expectations, etc. into the equation? I'm not sure we can. And therein lies another unique paradox. That one, in addition to the fact that, as Fermi had said, if alien life exists out there, as we know it must, I mean, come on, they've got to be out there somewhere. Well, if that alien life exists, where's the evidence? Because they should have been here by now. They should have sent their probes. And yet, it very well may be that that's what UFOs represent. And yet, the very scientists, the ones who are the most interested in whether alien life exists, are all too willing to discount even the possibility. Now look, you guys know I'm not saying UFOs are extraterrestrials. But they may be. That's not a possibility that we should necessarily rule out, especially with our expectations, biased though they may be, that E.T. should have visited. All right, more in a moment when we return. It is the Micah Hanks Program. Welcome back. You know, in light of some of the paradoxes of space, time, the lingering questions about extraterrestrial life, physics, everything we were discussing in the last segment, I thought I'd go ahead and just get into some of the discussion about recent comments by scientists regarding UFOs, and this in advance of our assessment of what lawmakers on Capitol Hill have recently been briefed about, because this was apparently fairly big news the other day. I mean, some congressmen and women coming away from this briefing, which involved the FBI, also the Navy, some of them saying, wow, you know, that was really eye-opening. I had no idea any of this sort of stuff was going on. And again, it's really of significance to me because one of the, well, great divides, another paradox we might see, is that while the government appears to be collecting information and they're briefing lawmakers about all of this, one of the reasons that scientists appear to be very dismissive of UFOs, well, there are a lot of reasons, really, and we'll look at some of those here in a moment, but one appears to be that they are not being made privy to the same information that elected officials have been made privy to during classified briefings like the one that occurred last week. And so I have long argued that really, if we are going to advance science and our overall scientific understanding of the reality that we all share and whether extraterrestrial visitation might actually fit into that, I mean, we're going to have to start having scientists get involved in this debate too, and that's going to require certain civilians who are capable scientists, worthy of and willing to study this phenomena. They're going to have to be brought up to speed on what information the government has collected. And this is certainly also one of the reasons that I think it's very important that we begin to move toward the possibility of having congressional hearings. Again, get some real discussion and dialogue going about what the government has been collecting about UAP. Bring this to the public attention and try to get scientists to at least seriously consider these possibilities. Not to say they haven't done that in the past. Again, we'll talk about that more a little later. But first, I want to come over to a bit of opinion that was expressed recently at CNN by Don Lincoln. He is a senior scientist at the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory. Very fitting since we were just discussing Fermi's paradox. And Mr. Lincoln is also an author of a number of science books, one of them actually being Alien Universe, Extraterrestrial Life in Our Minds and in the Cosmos. And so he is rather well-suited to be weighing in on the concept of alien life, but he also recently addressed UFOs in his op-ed there for CNN. And Lincoln makes some really good points, also a few, though, that I maybe take issue with. I want to quote him here. Here's one thing that I definitely think that he says that is necessary. And he says, if we break the mental link between UFOs and extraterrestrial life, then the idea of a UFO sighting seems more plausible. Now, again, why break the link, the mental link, between UFOs and extraterrestrial life? Well, because naturally, a lot of people simply accept it as a foregone conclusion that UFOs must be extraterrestrial. I mean, there's nothing else they could be. Many people hold that view, but that, again, is a opinion. It is not something that is necessarily supported by evidence. And this is where I sympathize with the scientists. Lincoln goes on to say, however, sure, a UFO could be a saucer-carrying little green men, but it could also be a military craft, or most sadly for alien enthusiasts, an even more prosaic space object like the planet Venus, weather balloons, airplanes flying in formation, or a myriad of other ordinary phenomena often combined together. Lincoln then takes us down a rather lengthy rabbit hole where he goes all the way back to the Second World War and looks at Foo Fighter reports. He then revisits Kenneth Arnold. You know, he gives a very brief, I mean a really brief, overview of UFO thought and the different sightings and incidents that have bolstered people's opinions about UFOs over the years. But he goes on to say later, connections with flying saucers aside, there is a real question as to what is going on when a strange object is observed in flying through the air. Or maybe the better question is anything going on? That's what many people, he says, hope the forthcoming report from the Pentagon will tell us. He then takes another brief dive through UFO lore and brings us all the way up to the present, mentioning Lou Elizondo, Harry Reid, and what have you. But he says, so what do I think about UFOs and little green men, which he calls LGMs? As a scientist, Lincoln says, I think that extraterrestrial life is common in the universe. After all, astronomers have discovered thousands of exoplanets, and chemistry is chemistry. So given the right conditions, he says, life will arise from the same chemical reactions here we see on Earth, and other chemical combinations are also possible. Indeed, it boggles my mind to think that life has not evolved elsewhere. Although he also notes, I think it's likely that intelligent extraterrestrial life is relatively rare. Okay, fair point. You know, it may be that there's life all over the place, but manifestations of intelligent extraterrestrial life capable of creating technological manifestations like we here on Earth do, even if they are more advanced or less advanced than we are, they're going to be pretty rare. Okay, I get it. Lincoln goes on to say, here on Earth, millions of species have evolved since life began, and only humanity has evolved the intelligence and abilities to develop technologically advanced civilization. So he then says, I think that most probably all UFOs are not observations of extraterrestrial craft. Difficulties of interstellar travel aside, it seems to me to be inconceivable that an advanced species would find us interesting enough to visit, but not interesting enough to contact. Lincoln then says, and if they wanted to avoid contact, they're not being very stealthy about it. Now, a lot to break down right there. This is fascinating to me. And when I'm talking about these paradoxes that arise and the summation that scientists apply toward UFOs, look, I'm totally fine with them saying, let's separate the mental link that most of us have between UFOs and extraterrestrials. Fine, good, necessary maybe. But then, with all respect to Mr. Lincoln, accomplished scientist though he is, and one who's willing to at least engage in this debate about UFOs. I mean, kudos for that. But then when he says, it seems to me to be inconceivable that an advanced species would find us interesting enough to visit, but not interesting enough to contact. Why is that inconceivable? How do you know? What would motivate extraterrestrials to visit Earth? What makes you think they would necessarily come here with one objective in mind, saying hello? Well, if they're gonna drop by, they might as well at least be polite enough to say howdy. Really? I mean, is that necessarily an expectation we could have about extraterrestrials? I mean, guys, have you watched Star Trek? Did Captain Kirk and the gang always stop in and say hello? They often did say hi to the aliens that they met, sometimes a little more than hi, especially old Captain Kirk, if you know what I mean. But come on, let's also recognize that as innovative as the program was for its day, we look back on it now fondly, in fact, and recognize it as one of the many manifestations of cheesy sci-fi that's been televised over the years. I mean that in love. But come on, guys, that kind of sci-fi is going to be a very loose extrapolation on theories about extraterrestrial life, to say the least. And yet, right there, even in the early days of Star Trekking, we had the concept of the Prime Directive. Yeah, even if you do interact with species, you don't do so in a way that will interfere with their way of life or significantly change the affairs of the civilizations that you visit with. Now, if we could come up with an idea like that, I mean, we shouldn't say that aliens necessarily would do the same, but it stands to reason that they may have similar reasons to ours for doing something similar, even if it's not governed by the same philosophies or the same experiences, the same morals or understanding of science that we as humans have. I mean, they may have reasons that they wouldn't necessarily want to interact with us. And I say that because our own scientists have expressed over the years many reasons why they say it could be dangerous to interact with extraterrestrials. Don't invite them here, because that might bring unwanted guests who would try to invade our planet, and we Earthlings may not fare all the better for that. I mean, that's just one example. There are many reasons scientists say it could be dangerous to engage with aliens. Therefore, if extraterrestrials were visiting Earth, they may have their own reasons for wanting to keep a distance between us and them. So again, with respect, Mr. Lincoln, I'm not so sure that it's inconceivable that they would come all the way to Earth, but that they would avoid contact. I mean, I think about all the wildlife biologists out there who may tranquilize grizzly bears or lions in Africa or other large, potentially dangerous species, and they can essentially operate almost unbeknownst to those animals and in ways that they can tag that animal and study it, and the animal has very little knowledge of having been tagged, let alone that it is currently being studied. I mean, we do this with animals all the time. And those biologists, interested in those animals though they are, they don't generally like to get too close to those animals, do they? They don't go out there and try to introduce themselves, do they? Well, let's go out here and wander into this pride of lions, let them know why we're here, what we intend to do. Great idea, huh? No, again, those biologists recognize the necessity for being able to operate in stealthy fashion. Just because, in other words, we humans think we're intelligent, maybe we shouldn't presume that aliens would treat us the same, okay? And indeed, if I'm actually wrong about those thermodynamic principles, in accordance with limitations on intelligence, and they are indeed much more evolved, far more cerebral than we are, then they may indeed see us as equivalent to ants. Less than that, in fact. And so why necessarily come and say hello? They may not even feel that they can. But to Lincoln's other point, if they wanted to avoid contact, then they're not being very stealthy about it? How does that fit into the narrative being presented? I mean, ask yourself, if you are making an argument against UFOs, and yet you're saying if they wanted to avoid contact that they're not being very stealthy about it, it sure sounds to me like you're acknowledging something's going on. And of course, Professor Lincoln is doing that. He's saying, well, I'm not saying that they are extraterrestrial. Sure, we can say that there's something, but whatever this is obvious, and therefore it's very unlikely that it's extraterrestrials. But again, that to me is a really strange statement because, again, if you say, well, obviously there is something, and UFOs obviously represent that something, we can all agree on that, but it is highly unlikely that whatever that something is extraterrestrial visitation because they wouldn't come all this way and not say hello. You know, again, you may be leading with presumptions that cause you to rule out a very significant possibility. That possibility being that UFOs very well could represent extraterrestrials, but because of your own expectations for how ET is going to behave, you rule that possibility out, and therefore look at UFOs as being anything other than what they might actually be. So rather than saying, let's separate the mental connection between ET and UFOs, and lead with the presumption UFOs therefore must be anything but ET, I think we need to be much more open-minded, but also remain critical thinkers. UFOs could be a number of things, and ET may be one of them. But we've got to find the best way to determine the source, the ultimate source of the better instances of purported UAP. But one more thing, if you'll indulge me just for a moment. One more thing is just screaming at me here about what Dr. Lincoln says, because as he notes, if they wanted to avoid contact, they're not being very stealthy about it. To me, what is so incredible about this statement, and indeed very paradoxical, is the fact that so many scientists, like Dr. Lincoln, continue to say that UFOs don't represent extraterrestrials and that there is very little evidence that ET has ever visited Earth, let alone that we've found any evidence of them. If we were to presume that UFOs did represent ET, I would have to argue they're doing an incredibly good job being stealthy about it because scientists continue to refuse to acknowledge the possibility that that is indeed what UFOs might represent. If UFOs did have ET origins, the ETs are utilizing an incredibly successful strategy because the scientists won't even entertain the possibility that they're here. Oh, the paradoxes. All right, when we return, we're going to turn our attention toward Capitol Hill as we examine the UFO situation up there here on the Micah Hanks program. So what actually occurred last week when Capitol Hill lawmakers received a classified briefing on UFOs? Welcome back. It is the Micah Hanks program. Lots to report on as this developing situation continues to attract interest and really challenge a lot of our conceptions as far as this subject goes and really our overall perception of life here on Earth. You know, I was talking to a friend over the weekend, and I said, often when we look at the world, we, I guess, lead with the presumption that we have a pretty good idea of what's going on, right? We all think we have a pretty good grasp on reality. And yet, it very well may be the case that The kinds of things we see in films like Star Wars or on programs like Star Trek are actually, in many ways, more similar to reality than we may be aware of. Wouldn't it be fascinating if indeed the ultimate resolution to some of the UFO phenomenon were the very thing that many suspected it was all along, extraterrestrial visitation? And if that were the case, then indeed it seems to open up the possibility that our universe is inhabited, there are other intelligences, space travel, just like what we see in science fiction films, is actually a reality. We're still stuck in the production phase where we're making it for television, but we can't make it functional for actual space flight, but they're already here. They were hiding under our noses, and hidden so well on account of the fact that many scientists simply found it unlikely that they would already be here, and therefore they never bothered to look. But hypothetical though that scenario may be, the reality is there are a lot of people now looking at the apparent UFO reality, whatever its origins may be, and this is indeed what's been going on up there on Capitol Hill in recent days. Now, news of a classified briefing that some lawmakers would be receiving, and those of course being associated with the House Intelligence Committee, was first reported by CNN last week. They got a tip that there would be a briefing occurring on Wednesday. As CNN reported, they said it was confirmed to them by two sources familiar with the committee's plans and comes just weeks before the U.S. intelligence community is scheduled to deliver an unclassified report on the matter for Congress. According to one committee source, Wednesday's briefing will be conducted by the Navy and the FBI. That, of course, was indeed correct, but there was some additional commentary that CNN provided that was interesting. And they noted, the fact that Congress is receiving briefings and the intelligence community is producing reports on what the Pentagon has labeled UAPs, or Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, is itself extraordinary. After years of Washington infighting, including bureaucratic battles within the Pentagon and pressure from certain members of Congress, the U.S. government finally appears to be taking seriously what has for so long been considered a fringe issue. Here again, the paradoxes. Now that government appears to be taking it seriously, how long that will last remains to be seen. But if they've been collecting significant amounts of information about it, and they can convince lawmakers that this is of significance, well, then this may indeed remain an item of interest for them. And as Harry Reid and others have said, there needs to be longer continuing studies. But again, I maintain you're going to have to also at some point get serious scientists involved in this effort. And that's going to require letting people know what information you have. You're going to have to share that recipe sooner or later, in other words, otherwise we're just going to figure it out. Like I always do when I go to restaurants, I just go home and I try and figure it out, reverse engineer the recipe, and then I cook it at home and I don't have to go and pay for it. So they might as well just go ahead and let us know what they've got, right? Now, Fox News, the day of the briefing in question, reporting that Capitol Hill lawmakers said Wednesday that UFOs could pose a pressing threat to America's national security, as the polls emerged from a highly classified briefing with Navy and FBI officials on unexplained phenomena. The briefing apparently occurred in a sensitive, compartmented information facility, or an SCIF. This is usually the case, though, when it comes to information that shouldn't be publicly disclosed. And keep in mind, of course, although this is the classified aspect of this report, and we all expected there would be one, there is supposed to also be a public version of the report with significant redactions that we're all going to be seeing maybe as soon as this week. Who knows? So they say, as for the existence of extraterrestrial life, the lawmakers largely left the secrets inside the surveillance-proof room, declining to tell reporters what they learned. But there were a few notable quotes that were supplied to the media, and I want to share a few of those right here, one being Representative Sean Patrick Maloney of New York, who was quoted by Fox News saying, "We take the issue of unexplained aerial phenomena seriously. To the extent that we're dealing with the safety and security of U.S. military personnel or the national security interests in the United States, so we want to know what we're dealing with." Maloney went on to say, "I think it's important to understand that there are legitimate questions involving the safety and security of our personnel and in our operations and in our sensitive activities, and we all know that there's a proliferation of technologies out there. We need to understand this space a little better." He means the environment, by the way, not necessarily space outside our atmosphere, but that might apply too. Now, Representative Val Demings, Democrat from Florida, also chimed in. "You know, it's always about our safety and security. Our national security is priority number one, and so that's really the area where we are focused on this morning." Adam Schiff, committee chairman, also implied that the briefing was eye-opening, saying it was an interesting briefing and that he did learn things that certainly were new to me, but I think I'm going to leave it at that. Otherwise, he wouldn't comment on, well, of course, the classified information that the Navy and the FBI had just provided him. Let's see, next up, Representative Andre Carson, Republican from Illinois, who's been heading efforts on the UFO inquiry, said, and this is key, by the way, that Americans should expect an eventual public hearing on the report's findings. That's right, Carson said, we're looking forward to having a public hearing at some point. I mean, there's some national security concerns that we want to take into consideration. We also had representative from Illinois Mike Quigley saying that, if anything, the landmark report shows that UFOs are finally being taken seriously. He says the stigma is gone. Now, that's as big a change in policy as I've witnessed about the issue in my lifetime, so the fact that they are taking this sort of thing seriously for the first time, I think, is important. Quigley, according to Fox News, however, cautioned the public about getting their hopes up for the report. He said, if I had to predict how the public will react to this, one word would be disappointing. How about that? They also quote Representative Peter Welch of Vermont, who stated after receiving the briefing that he is, quote, not on the edge of my seat, unquote. Admittedly, I am not surprised that some members of Congress who received this briefing weren't as interested as Adam Schiff or others appeared to be. But you also got to keep in mind the range of attitudes that people have applied toward this subject for years now. Again, there are those who are like, come on, UFOs are it. They may represent one of the single most important discoveries in all of the sciences and all of the history of humankind. And then you got people who say, come on, guys, weather balloons, ball lightning, that's not interesting to me. And so I'm not surprised that there are going to be lawmakers on Capitol Hill who receive a briefing from the FBI and the Navy on this. Some are like, very interesting. No matter what they are, we want to try and understand it. And there are other people saying, okay, cool, great, whatever. Same old, same old. Next story. You know, show me something significant. Show me some information about China or Russia and weapons they may have. UFOs, in other words, always have been and appear to continue to be a sort of Rorschach test, in the sense that, based on what you already believe, you're going to interpret information that you are provided on this subject, generally through that lens of bias and belief. But nonetheless, there have been some members of Congress who have continued to chime in on this, and they say that indeed this is not only something that's significant, it merits further attention. One who has continued to do that, of course, is Marco Rubio, senator from Florida, who says that his main concern isn't about extraterrestrials, even though, of course, in recent weeks he has chimed in on that. Now, his most recent statements are that this is really something we need to be looking at because he is concerned it could be an adversarial nation and their technology.
People can speculate about, well, you know, it's space aliens. You know, my biggest concern, frankly, is that it's another country, that there's been some technological leap that will catch us by surprise on behalf of one of our adversaries. That would be deeply concerning.
Now, one member of Congress that we haven't actually heard from yet, who in recent days was captured on camera talking at length about the UFO issue, is Representative Tim Burchett from Tennessee. He was approached by a TMZ photographer the other day, which, as TMZ photographers have done in the past with Marco Rubio, they asked Burchett his ideas about the current briefing and also what information the government has been collecting about UFOs and what that might represent. Tim Burchett had a lot to say about this, as you're about to hear.
Congressman, I know right now with President Biden, when he's going to speak to Putin, that he's talking, he's going to ask him about the UFO thing, yeah, and stuff like that.
I think that's ridiculous. If the Russians had UFO technology, I mean, they would own us right now. They used to say that, I've heard people talk about how the Nazis had it in the Second World War. But if they did, they would have won. That is ridiculous. It has to be something that's out of our galaxy. It just has to be if it in fact is real.
And Congressman, you have always been a straight shooter. It's been like, I know when it's been bipartisan, but the one thing I've noticed is doesn't matter which president it is, nobody ever talks about the...
They always say they're going to do something about it, and then they get in office and... And honestly, I thought Trump was going to do something. I was going to release the files. But, you know, they release these files, are redacted. It's just a big blob of whiteout. And clearly something's going on that we can't handle. I mean, UFOs were in the Bible. Read Ezekiel. It talks about the wheel flying around. So, I mean, They've been around since we've been around, and somebody needs to come up with some answers.
I love this. They've been flying around since the days of the Bible. As colorful as the commentary that Mr. Burchett is providing, I mean, I also have to appreciate how candid he is being with this reporter in saying, look, they always say that they're going to reveal this information, and they never do. Somebody's got to try and get this information out there. The public needs to know. In other words, really, it seems that the really bipartisan aspect of all this has to do with the fact that no matter who is in government, no matter which party is in control, it doesn't really matter because the end result is always the same and we don't ever have answers. He says we need to move past that. Little more audio.
So even when something's supposed to be released coming up in a few weeks or months, what do you think is going to be in that?
I don't believe it. I think Roswell was covered up. I think, you know, more people believe in UFOs than believe in Congress for good reason because of the jackleg stuff we do like that. We talk about we're going to release it and then we never do, or we release something that's so redacted that it's just ridiculous. The Air Force had a release on Roswell, which was the big deal, I think, from 48, and the big cover-up there. And the guy that did it was a smart aleck, and he kind of smirked the whole time, and nobody took it serious. They ought to take it serious. The American public wants to know, and frankly, we deserve to know.
I think at some point it's gonna happen, man.
I think they're going to release that. I think somebody's going to release stuff, the Kennedy assassination files. They're going to do it all. But we haven't had a president with enough guts to do it just yet.
I know a lot of people would probably be laughing right now. Oh, boy, Roswell, the Kennedy assassination. You know, this guy just believes every conspiracy theory there is. But let's not forget that early in the last administration, when a number of new Kennedy files were actually released, I mean, there was some really, really weird stuff in there. Let's not forget, for instance, about the call that was made to the American Embassy in London maybe a half hour before the actual assassination, and somebody said, watch for fireworks in the next little bit coming from the United States. I mean, somebody had to have known something in advance. And again, there are files in the information collected by our intelligence agencies that indicate this. This is not some wacky conspiracy theory. This isn't something that some fringe author has published. No, this was information that was released by our intelligence agencies. And that among the files that were allowed to be released. Keep in mind that there is still a trove of them that have remained out of the public view because intelligence agencies say they need more time combing through that data before it gets released to the public. Now look, if they have anything of greater significance than an anonymous call being made to the U.S. Embassy in London, tipping somebody off about the fact that a U.S. president was about to be assassinated, I really wonder what else is in those files. Again, I try to get my information on this subject from reliable sources, like, for instance, the Federation of American Scientists' ongoing project on government secrecy. I get the Secrecy News newsletter from Stephen Aftergood. Again, these are very skeptically inclined, rational people who are very concerned about government secrecy and an abundance of it that has prevailed really since maybe even before the end of the Second World War. There has been a climate of secrecy that has endured in Washington now for decades. And that's the point. And that's the very same point, by the way, that Representative Burchett there is addressing. He is saying, come on, you know, even Donald Trump had said, I'm going to release all these files. But when the intelligence agencies go to him and say, we need more time, he too capitulates and that information isn't released. And now we have the new administration in there, even with Barack Obama coming forward and having said, yeah, you know, there are things that we have filmed. We don't know what they are. And when we ask President Biden about it, he says, go ask Obama again. I mean, when are we going to get a president? Put politics aside. When are we going to get a leader in there who will take these issues seriously? Who will really take up the mantle for the American people and say, all right, the time has come. We do have to do exactly what Stephen Bassett and others have been saying. End the truth embargo, release to the public what information we have. And based on some of the lackluster responses from members of Congress who received that briefing the other day, I'm not sure that we're going to see the best of what the government has collected with this unclassified version of the report that's supposed to be released in the next few days. But then again, I guess we'll see. All right, more here in a moment when we return on the Micah Hanks Program. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Concerned citizens want to know. They need to know, in fact, what's happening in our skies. What does our government know about it? We're going to get back into this conversation about UFOs and the discussion on Capitol Hill here in a moment. But first, I do want to remind you, if you aren't already an ex-subscriber, you're only getting half of the conversation. And in fact, this week for ex-subscribers, I want to devote a little time to a topic I have not addressed on the main program yet. That is the passing of a friend of mine of many years, Mr. UFO, as he was known. That would be the late Timothy Green Beckley of New York. He passed away recently, and for ex-subscribers, we're going to have a special that's remembering sometimes the wacky work and also sometimes the very insightful opinions about UFOs that Beckley maintained over the years. He was indeed very much a character, but, you know, UFO history has a long-running relationship with people who saw the lighter side of this, and I think that's very important despite, of course, the severity of the situation as many recognize it right now. So we're going to have that, and of course, over the weekend, we just dropped a new edition of Enigmas. We were looking, of course, at the enduring mystery related to underwater UFOs or these transmedium vehicles, and how one Scottish zoologist had essentially really set the tone for that aspect of the discussion decades ago. Yes, that was Ivan Sanderson. And so there's a whole lot to get caught up on for ex-subscribers. If you aren't already one, it's just $7 a month or $77 a year. Well worth the time and the investment to get a little additional commentary every week from here at your friends at the Micah Hanks Program. It's hard work we do, and of course, that's one of the best ways that you can support our efforts. Also, don't forget there at my website, MicahHanks.com. Occasionally, I do send out newsletters. You can sign up for the newsletter there. And of course, at MicahHanks.com, you'll also see all the different podcasts I produce. In fact, there's a whole podcast page, which is MicahHanks.com/shows. That's where you can see all the shows I produce, including Middle Theory, Sasquatch Tracks, and the Seven Ages Audio Journal. That's right. I do four different podcasts plus X content every week. And I'm churning out articles like I do every week over there at thedebrief.org. Still write occasionally for Mysterious Universe and a lot of other places. I'm a busy guy, in other words, but nonetheless, always happy to hear from all of you out there. If you'd like to send along commentary, info@micahhanks.com is the email. You can email me directly. I get these emails from time to time. Dear staff, if you can please make sure this email is brought to Micah's attention. And I have to laugh because, I mean, I actually receive those emails. If you email me, info@micahhanks.com, the email will come to me. Now, I can't answer all the emails, but I get to as many as I possibly can. Even if I don't respond to all of them, I read everything that comes in, and I definitely appreciate your perspectives. And of course, if you are social media savvy, you can also follow me at Micah Hanks on Twitter. That's one way that you can interact with me as well. You can tweet at me, or you can direct message me there, or just follow me to keep up with updates, ideas, commentary, opinion that I occasionally share. If you're a Facebook user, you can also find me over there at facebook.com/MicahHanksOfficial. That is the official Micah Hanks page. And on Instagram at Micah_Hanks. If you like the visual aesthetic of Instagram, I'm easy to find on there. A lot of you guys like to keep up with me there. Although, I will note, if you're expecting constant commentary on UFOs and the unexplained on my Instagram account, that is one place where you're not going to get that. You know, I put a lot of updates about the podcasts and things on Facebook and on Twitter. On Instagram, it's just me, sometimes playing my guitar, sometimes drinking coffee. That's where we like to keep things a little more casual. So there's something for everybody out there. And again, those are all the ways you can follow me, but I've got them all linked in the upper right-hand corner of the page there at MicahHanks.com, so that way you don't have to remember all that junk I just told you. Go over there, click the social media icon, and be sure and follow. Okay, so getting back into the conversation here. There was an unusually interesting article over here at MyNews13.com out of Orlando. And this was providing commentary on the position that has been expressed by some members of Congress following this classified briefing the other day. And they note, the growing number of sightings of unidentified flying objects or UFOs by military and commercial pilots is now drawing the attention of the federal government. Members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees on Capitol Hill have now been briefed on the much-anticipated UFO report that is expected to be released at the end of this month. They then quote Val Demings, representative from Florida, who said, "We do have reason to be concerned until we are able to rule out any threat to the traveling public, to those military pilots, to our military facilities." Now, that's a rather interesting statement, especially on account of the fact that they say before military pilots and military facilities being of concern, the traveling public That's right. Representative Val Demings, in other words, apparently acknowledging the concerns about a possible threat from UAP to commercial airliners. Now, again, we've had Ted Rowe from NARCAP on the program in the past, and as Ted and I have talked about, if the threat from UAP is real, it is a secondary threat. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any indication that these technologies or phenomena are intentionally trying to harm anybody, but when pilots see them, that can in itself represent a threat because of distraction. If a pilot perceives it as being something that it isn't, for instance, let's say that they see a bright light and the pilot thinks immediately, oh my gosh, that's an oncoming aircraft. And rather than checking instrumentation, trying to see if there's a transponder or anything like that, if he sees that and thinks, oh my gosh, I'm going to have a mid-air collision, and he takes evasive action and reacts before looking at the instrumentation, I mean, that in itself could lead to dangers for the pilot, or if there indeed is a crew, or if there are passengers, they also may be put at risk. And so these are the kinds of secondary concerns that UAP may represent to commercial airliners. And that's a very significant problem, one I have written a lot about over the years, and one that must be given consideration. So I'm glad that Demings is talking about that. I don't know if we can take that as being an indication that this was part of what the congressmen and women there during the briefing on Wednesday were actually briefed about, but it's very much at least on his mind. They further quote Demings here saying, "It's an ongoing investigation. I think that they are competent and capable of identifying those unidentified objects." The Department of Defense, they say, has been keeping track of these kinds of reports for decades, but only recently acknowledged their existence. That's not necessarily entirely true. I mean, the Department of Defense did officially release three videos that were already in the public sphere. They classed the objects in those videos as unidentified. But, I mean, we've been getting information from intelligence agencies for decades. And, yes, of course, they've always downplayed their interest or involvement in UFO studies, but nonetheless, I mean, I think it's been evident that the government acknowledges something because of the very fact that they have collected information about it, and many concerned citizens have obtained that information through Freedom of Information Act requests. The article goes on to quote Avi Loeb, who was kind enough to jump on the microphone here on this program with us a while back. Dr. Loeb of Harvard University was quoted saying there was a taboo on discussing technological civilizations beyond Earth for a while. It was considered a little crazy, perhaps in the realm of science fiction, but I think we're getting to the time where it will be part of the mainstream discussion. Now, Dr. Loeb, notably, is very careful about weighing in on UFOs. He's all about talking about the idea of extraterrestrial visitation, and in fact, he actually gets a little pushback from other scientists about how all in on that he appears to be. If anything, I would say that Dr. Loeb appears very dedicated to discussing extraterrestrial life and possible instances of their visitation to Earth, or at very least to our solar system. Hence why he seems to think that Oumuamua very well may have been an interstellar probe. But part of the pushback that Loeb continues to get is, well, look, you know, you're so convinced that Oumuamua was an extraterrestrial probe, and indeed if UFOs represent extraterrestrial technology, you don't seem to be as willing to weigh in on that topic. Yet again, the paradoxes. But now, as far as the real heart of the conversation that we're going to have this week, you know, I was particularly interested in the fact that there was discussion following this classified briefing last week about the potential for there being future congressional hearings on the UFO issue. Because that would certainly be a first, but this would not be the first time in history that this had been an item of discussion, nor would it be the first time that we have seen lawmakers attempting to actually get Congress to be more engaging on this subject and actually hold hearings. And so to understand really the history of this aspect of it, congressional hearings on UFOs, we have to go back in time. I refer to an article here from March 22, 1966 that appeared in the New York Times, titled 40 in Michigan Report Mysterious Flying Objects. They note that at least 40 persons, including 12 policemen, said that they saw a strange flying object guarded by four sister ships land in a swamp near here Sunday night. Descriptions of the unidentified flying objects tallied closely. A patrolman who was quoted in this AP article that appeared in the Times, Robert Hunawill, said that he and other residents of the area saw similar craft before dawn last Monday and Wednesday. Meanwhile, they note in Washington, the Air Force said it knew nothing of the reports. The Air Force's Michigan headquarters in Battle Creek, they said, would not comment. The report goes on to note that two persons who slogged through the 300-acre swamp today and looked for traces of the craft found nothing but marsh grass, not to be confused with marsh gas, quicksand, and muck. However, they say the two persons who reportedly were closest to the object, Frank Manor, 47 years old, and his son Ronald, who was 19, said it did not appear to touch the ground, but sat on a base of fog. Now, something else that really remains interesting about this famous case from Michigan back in 1966 involves the number of police officers who also saw the objects. And in fact, in the article that was featured in the New York Times, they quote Fred Davids, who is the state police commissioner, who's also head of the civil defense for Michigan, and he said that, quote, I used to discount these reports too, but now I'm not so sure. The following day, the New York Times ran an update saying a civil defense director, an assistant dean, and 87 co-eds reported that a glowing object flew past a college dormitory and hovered in a swamp for hours. Their description of the object tallied closely with that of one seen by more than 50 persons, including 12 policemen, near Ann Arbor the previous night. So the UFO reports continued, and, as the Times noted, the Air Force announced it was bringing in Dr. J. Allen Hynek, chairman of Dearborn University at Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois, and scientific consultant to the Air Force's Project Blue Book program to track down the reports of unidentified flying objects. Now, of course, Dr. Hynek's involvement during this instance would become infamous, because it was during a press conference shortly after these sightings that he said that, in fact, the sightings occurring over a swamp indicated to him that in all probability, what the observers had likely seen was marsh gas or swamp gas. In other words, a variety of natural luminous phenomena that can occur as a result of decomposition that occurs in wetlands. Now, if indeed this had been marsh gas, as Dr. Hynek had initially suggested, it would be curious because whatever these lights were remained visible for hours. We now have on March 25th another update that appeared in the New York Times. This one reporting that Deputy Sheriff David Fitzpatrick showed photographs today of streaks of light in the sky that he said were made by the unidentified flying objects he observed in the sky over southeast Michigan 9 days ago. The report notes that more than a score of persons, including both deputies and policemen, have reported sighting flying objects at night since then. Deputy Fitzpatrick made his photographs just outside of Milan, Michigan, 15 miles south of Ann Arbor, with a Minox Model B camera, roughly the size of a cigarette lighter. He said that the camera, which has a 3.5 lens, was on time exposure for 10 and 12 minutes. The photographs show two distinct streaks of light high above streetlights of Carpenter Road leading to Milan. No detailed objects, however, are visible in the photos, which were taken at 5:30 a.m. The article goes on to say that Deputy Fitzpatrick said his camera had been pointed southeast and that the Sheriff's Sergeant Newell Schneider had observed the flying objects from around 4 a.m. until 7 a.m. He said they looked like a brilliant light. Enlarged by 8 to 10 inches from a negative smaller than a postage stamp, the photograph shows streaks of light. Now, the photograph had actually been published in the New York Times. I'm looking at it right now. And one thing that stands out about the movement of the objects in the photograph is they both appear to be moving in the exact same direction, but in opposite regions of the sky. And to me, that is indeed strongly suggestive that these might have been planets or stars. In this instance, that explanation may have been offered long ago. It may have been ruled out. Again, I'm just looking at this photograph, and the fact that these two objects in separate regions of the sky are not only moving in exactly the same direction, but also moving upward into the sky, it's strongly suggestive of the movement of planets or stars that would have been photographed with a long exposure. That's exactly how you'd expect them to look. Of course, if that had been the case, I presume also that Dr. Hynek, an astronomer, would likely have said those are planets instead of what he actually ended up saying the following day, as quoted by Walter Rugeber, special to the New York Times, on March 26, where he wrote that an investigator for the Air Force said today that at least two of the southern Michigan's mysterious flying objects were nothing more than marsh gas. That is notable, especially in light of the following memorandum that I will now read, which was written the same day, and the letterhead on the document actually reads, from the office of House Minority Leader Gerald R. Ford, Republican of Michigan. And I quote, House Minority Leader Gerald R. Ford today proposed that Congress investigate the rash of reports of sightings of unidentified flying objects in southern Michigan and other parts of the country. Ford said he believes a congressional inquiry would be worthwhile, because the American people are becoming alarmed by the UFO stories. He noted that the Air Force investigators have been checking on such reports for years, but have come up with nothing conclusive. Ford is quoted in the memo saying, in the light of these new sightings and incidents, it would be a very wholesome thing for a committee of the Congress to conduct a number of hearings and to call responsible witnesses from the executive branch of the government and witnesses who say that they have sighted these objects. Ford went on to say, I think the American people would feel better if there was a full-blown investigation of these incidents, which some persons allege to have taken place. And this really was the turning point in all of this, because it was at this moment when then-Representative Gerald Ford came out on behalf of the good people of Michigan and said, you know what, we've got to get to the bottom of this UFO business. Congressional hearings should be held. The people deserve to know. And indeed, as they say, past is prologue, maybe these historical events will foreshadow somewhat what is yet to unfold in the days ahead with the forthcoming UAP Task Force report. We'll report more on that and much more when we return right here on the Micah Hanks Program. Investigating flying objects might cause public alarm. Welcome back. It is the Micah Hanks Program, March 27th, 1966. Representative Ford had just jumped into the game. And of course, American newspapers were following this developing story. Everett Clark, writing for the New York Times, noting that across the swamps of southern Michigan earlier this week, flying saucers flew. An Air Force investigator shot most of them down with a simple explanation: swamp gas. But policemen, a civil defense director, a house mother, and hundreds of college students had seen the mysterious lights, and it is safe to say that not all of them accepted the investigator's conclusion. The opening of this year's saucer season, they reported, the 20th year for unidentified flying objects, has presented official Washington with a problem. Indeed, lawmakers were getting in on the game. In fact, they might have felt that they had no choice, that at very least, seemingly, what was going through the mind of then-Representative Gerald R. Ford, House Republican leader, who injected a new element by calling for a full-blown congressional investigation. The Times reporting that such inquiries have been proposed many times before, but never by one of Mr. Ford's stature in government. Now, you got to take into consideration what's going on here, because again, at the time, Gerald Ford maybe was the most significant politician to have ever come forward and said, let's do this now. Let's look at UFOs. And this, decades before, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid would also begin appropriating funding along with other members of Congress for what later became disclosed to the public through the New York Times, no less, as the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, otherwise known as the Pentagon's secret, but now not so secret, UFO research program. One of many that we have heard about in recent years. But before all of that went down, we had Gerald Ford up there in Washington, who at that time, for that period in history, had been the highest-ranking member of government, an elected official, to have said, we need to study UFOs. And they quoted Mr. Ford saying, I can assure you there is considerable interest, and I suspect public concern. Very much like the current climate, both in Washington and across the United States, as we await the findings of the UAP Task Force. Now, the article goes on to note, Congress has been and still is reluctant to investigate. To do so is to encourage the idea that there is more to the unidentified flying objects than mistaken sightings of natural or man-made objects. To refuse to investigate, however, opens Congress to the charge, often made by fervent believers, that the government knows what the saucers are but is covering up. Now, those two very quick lines, in many ways, do still ring true to this very day in the way that they summarize the situation. In other words, it's a damned if you do and damned if you don't kind of thing, because if government gets involved and they do carry out investigations, then of course that has the effect, as the government's current inquiries already do, of legitimizing the UFO issue. And there are certainly some people, both in government, certainly in the sciences, and other interested parties that would not like to see any kind of legitimization of the UFO issue. On the other hand, there are obviously a bunch of congressmen and women up there right now, like Marco Rubio and many others that we've discussed over the course of this conversation this week. And they all look at this and they say, well, not only is there a national security issue we feel, and one that we do want to understand, whatever its origins may be, but also, yes, the people have the right to know. But people felt that way decades ago, and we still didn't see any kind of significant momentum that actually led to a hearing in Congress that dealt significantly with the issue. It has remained something that intelligence agencies have collected information about. Branches of the military have at various times collected information about. But there has been no headway made in terms of the efforts of elected leaders. And so part of what we seek to try and understand by studying the past, but also applying our understanding of those political events to what's unfolding right now, is to understand exactly how we overcome whatever hinders progress on the UFO topic. Now, in my opinion, I think it's really going to be a threefold process. One, we have the more bureaucratic elements within government, the intelligence community, the military, provide this information to elected officials, as we have seen in recent days. More of that information then must be revealed to the public, and the public has to have access to certain amounts of information. And then finally, scientists also need to be made abreast of the situation and be allowed to participate in evaluation of that based on information being collected by the government, if indeed this is more than just a national security concern, and this may be a phenomena that should be studied more broadly and may have relevance to the entire planet and all life on it. That really, in my opinion, is what has to happen. That is essentially the order of operations that needs to occur as well. And maybe we are seeing that. But what remains to be seen, of course, is whether the general public will have access to significant amounts of information collected by government, and of course, what the response from the scientific community will be if there is evidence that warrants further investigation in their mind. But now returning to the newspaper archives. This brings us up to March 28th. Here again, the New York Times reporting new flying objects sighted in Michigan. The sightings, yes, were continuing. On the night of March 27th this time, three policemen in this little community reported watching a bright blue light over Lake Huron for about a half hour early today. One Peter Torres described the object as very large and moving too fast to be a star. The article goes on to quote a number of other witnesses and, notably, they continue to reference J. Allen Hynek saying that this was probably just marsh gases, something he would probably never live down, especially on account of what you're about to hear. This, another news release from the office of Representative Gerald Ford, yet again issued the same day as the report we were just referencing, March 28, 1966. This time, a note to all news media. House Minority Leader Gerald R. Ford today sent the attached letter to the chairman and the ranking Republican members of the House Committee on Armed Services and Science and Astronautics, urging that one committee or the other investigate the subject of unidentified flying objects, or UFOs. The memo goes on to state that Ford is not satisfied with the Air Force explanation of the recent sightings in Michigan and describes the swamp gas version given by astrophysicist J. Allen Hynek as flippant. Ford, the memo concludes, has received a number of telegrams and letters from individuals anxious to see a congressional investigation of UFOs. So there was widespread public support for the idea. Ford, of course, working on behalf of his constituents, felt obligated to try and push for congressional hearings, and he wasn't very satisfied with what Dr. Hynek ended up having to say. Now, who would have thought at that point that mean Mr. Scientist, who was standing up there at the press conference saying, "You guys just saw marsh gas, no UFOs here, no offense to the kind people of Michigan, but again, you guys are mistaken." Yeah, whoever would have thought that this scientist, this advisor to the Air Force, this skeptic, this doubter, that he would go on to become one of the staunchest advocates for a UFO reality. Celebrated by many UFO believers, despised by many skeptics. Yeah, that was the same guy who was talking about the swamp gas. However, of course, of great significance had been the fact that the memo I was referring to earlier had been essentially the cover letter on a much lengthier note sent by Gerald Ford to Representative George P. Miller, who at that time was chairman of the Science and Astronautics Committee at the U.S. House of Representatives, and also Representative L. Mendel Rivers, who was chairman of the Armed Services Committee. And in his letter, Gerald Ford wrote, and I quote, "Dear Chairman Miller and Rivers, you no doubt have noted the recent flurry of newspaper reports about unidentified flying objects. I have taken special interest in these accounts because many of the latest reported sightings have been in my home state of Michigan. The Air Force sent a consultant, astrophysicist Dr. J. Allen Hynek of Northwestern University, to Michigan to investigate the various reports, and he dismissed all of them as the product of college student pranks or swamp gas or an impression created by the rising crescent moon and the planet Venus. I do not agree that all of these reports can be or should be so easily explained away. Because I think there may be substance to some of these reports, and because I believe the American people are entitled to a more thorough explanation than has been given them by the Air Force to date, I am proposing that either the Science and Astronautics Committee or the Armed Services Committee of the House schedule hearings on the subject of UFOs and invite testimony from both the executive branch of the government and some of the persons who claim to have seen UFOs. Now, before we continue, I want to point out there was a lot happening here. One of those issues, of course, being the fact that Ford was very vocally expressing his discontent with what Hynek had said. Ford, of course, also would later go on to be president. But, I mean, considering the fact that even at the time, as a ranking member in Congress, he had been a person of quite a significant pedigree, you might say, to be urging for congressional hearings on UFOs, that he would also be someone who was so critical of Hynek, rather flippantly, as he put it, dismissing sightings by Michiganians as being that of swamp gas rather than UFOs, I can't help but think that this might have actually had a fairly significant impact on J. Allen Hynek. Here's the Republican minority leader. You know, here we have people on Capitol Hill that are breaking down, assessing, and criticizing my statements. Maybe I did speak a little too soon. I mean, this could have been a very formative experience for J. Allen Hynek, one of many ways that he eventually began to take the topic more seriously as a scientist, one of the few of his era who did. The other thing, too, is we have to take into consideration what had been driving Gerald Ford. Because it's not just the fact that he's interested in UFOs that causes him to do this. You know, I think this is neat. I want to get some people to look at it. No, it was because he was getting all of these telegrams from his constituents and from people all around the country saying how serious they thought this was. And toward the end of the letter that we're referencing here, which he wrote to the two members of the two respective committees, he actually cites a number of those memos. He says, "I've just today received a number of telegrams urging a congressional investigation of UFOs. One is from retired Air Force Colonel Harold R. Brown from Tennessee, who says, 'I have seen a UFO and will be available to testify.' Another from Mrs. Ethel M. Davis from Eugene, Oregon, reads, 9 out of 10 people want the truth of UFOs. Press your investigation to the fullest.' He cites Ronald Collier of Los Angeles, who identifies himself as a scientist from MIT, who urges that you, quote, do everything in your power to make the Air Force Project Blue Book known to the people." After citing these as examples, Ford says, "Are we to assume that everyone who says he has seen UFOs is an unreliable witness?" He then quotes one of the UPI stories that we actually cited earlier. At least 40 persons, including 12 policemen, said today that they saw a strange flying object guarded by four sister ships land in a swamp near here Sunday night. Ford writes that Matt Searle of station WJR in Detroit cites an eyewitness account of a recent UFO sighting by an astronautical engineer employed by the Ford Motor Company. He points out that an astronautical engineer can hardly be considered an untrustworthy witness. Don't tell that to a skeptic, though. Remember, skeptics will tell you that astronautical engineers, pilots, policemen, none of them are good witnesses. I mean, at some point, though, we do have to ask ourselves, if this many people are seeing these things, and they all agree there really appeared to be something unusual, unlike anything else we have ever seen before. We've all seen stars. Most of us have seen planets. Every one of us have seen the moon rise before. This was not that. It was the wrong color. This thing moved back and forth. It even appeared to land at one point. 80 of us saw it. Swamp gas. I think you get my point. I mean, this was very significant. There were many qualified observers. Whether or not they necessarily were right in everything that they observed, there were plenty of people who we would deem societally and otherwise as very qualified observers who not only saw things they couldn't explain, but were urging Representative Ford to push ahead with this investigation. And he obviously felt compelled to do so. And this had a tremendous effect at that time, one that indeed, as we have seen and as I have suggested, very well may have even played a role in the formation of J. Allen Hynek's future attitudes toward this topic. It would certainly be interesting to see if in the modern era, as in right now, if a more active role by politicians in congressional hearings might encourage some scientists today to do the same, wouldn't it? All right, we will continue this dialogue here in a moment on the Micah Hanks program. UFOs in the skies over Michigan, and congressmen in the hot seat. Welcome back. It is the Micah Hanks Program. And of course, in our historical inquiry this week, as we turn back the dials on our old time machine, as we so often do. What's happening in Washington right now is certainly of significance. It's very similar to events that have occurred in the past already. That's why we need to be able to understand what happened, and thereby perhaps what we can expect in the days ahead. Maybe also what could be done in an effort to try and produce the most welcome outcome. Because for my own part, I would really love to see congressional hearings held on the UFO issue. Again, I think that the efforts, limited though they ended up being back in 1966, I mean, actually there was a tremendous result, because ultimately what happens is Ford starts calling for congressional hearings, but the actual result ended up being that the Air Force says, okay, all right, great, fine. It's time that we analyze what we've been collecting for close to 2 decades. And then they award a contract to the University of Colorado. Edward U. Condon heads up a project, and they begin to study UFOs. But the result of that ended up, of course, having exactly the opposite effect from what many people wanted at that time. At the time that the Condon Committee had been carrying out its investigations, in fact, there had been many who actually thought this was the best thing that had happened at that time as far as UFOs were concerned. If you read in Jacques Vallée's published memoirs that were released a few decades ago, actually, I think they first were published in the 1990s, and then they were republished again by Anomalous Books. And those were titled Forbidden Science, released in 4 volumes. But it's his own personal journals that he published. A lot of, you know, surprisingly personal reflections on things, both UFO and non-UFO related, but really, if they show anything, they show just how often and how completely Vallée had remained focused on the UFO issue throughout his life. But in those journals, among the things that he says had been that, you know, we hope Allen and I, J. Allen Hynek, who he actually worked with there at Northwestern University at the time, we hope that the result of the Condon Committee's findings may be that there will be an ongoing scientific study. Perhaps Hynek and I will end up actually being brought in as ongoing consultants for this. This may be exactly what we have always wanted. Hopes are very high. I mean, to hear the way that Vallée had been writing about things as they were unfolding, I mean, one would have thought that it was finally happening. And here again, one of the big takeaways being that many people probably feel that way right now. Many people are expecting some big news in this report. I personally have very measured expectations, especially on account of what we already know about it. But I also look back to the past, and I look at how hopeful Dr. Vallée was. You know, I've invited him on the show. We've corresponded briefly about this. And I'd asked him, I said, you know, would you be willing to come on and talk with me about the historical parallels here and how significant all this is? And with respect to Dr. Vallée, he always kind of says, listen, you know, there's nothing I can tell you now that isn't already published in those books. Go read Forbidden Science. It's already going to tell you everything I wrote down decades ago, and it'll actually recall those things better than I can now. I mean, Vallée's like in his 80s now. But nonetheless, I really value the perspectives of people who lived through that. You know, Vallée maybe being the most significant commentator alive and involved at that time, who is still in that game today and remembers everything that we're talking about here and what the outcome was. And at this point, it very well could still be that the outcome will be exactly what we've seen in the past. History could repeat itself yet again. With so much momentum, the question is, what will we do with it? How can it be used in the best and the truest and the most honest way to achieve a different outcome from what we saw decades ago? Another memorandum from the office of Congressman Gerald Ford, April 3rd, 1966. As I had expected, some persons have ridiculed my call for a congressional investigation of unidentified flying objects. These people are a fraction of those who have given me their reaction to my proposal. The overwhelming majority of those expressing a view in letters to me believe a congressional investigation would be useful and is needed. Well, despite that, look what happened decades ago. Look what the outcome had been. You know, Ford went on to write, those who scoff at the idea of a congressional investigation of UFOs apparently are unaware that the House Armed Services Committee has scheduled a closed-door hearing on the matter Tuesday with the Air Force, and that Representative Joseph E. Carth from Minnesota headed a 3-man subcommittee which held 2 days of hush-hush hearings 5 years ago on behalf of the House Science and Astronautics Committee. Carth has confirmed in conversation with a member of my staff that he conducted these secret hearings. Now, again, a lot of people probably thinking, wait, hold on, there were hearings. Why are we saying we want to see hearings? We don't want to see the same thing happen again. But keep in mind, yeah, there were hearings held, but they were secret. Not unlike the briefing that occurred up there last week on Capitol Hill. But what some lawmakers, having come away from that briefing, are asking for and saying maybe in the days ahead that we will see is public hearings, congressional hearings that the public will be able to actually observe, react, and respond to. Oh, but Micah, you can't worry about all this. Come on, UFOs are so much more respectable now. Obviously, this momentum is going to carry through. We're going to see something come to fruition this time around. I mean, that couldn't not happen, right? Well, I don't know. You know, I'll refer to another newspaper headline, this one right here, from Nebraska's Sunday Journal and Star, the date October 16th, 1966, so the same year in question. The headline reading, Air Force investigates UFOs seen, flying saucers respectable again. Huh, they were respectable again in 1966. And then that went away, didn't it? Here again, for anyone who thinks that this period in history right now, in which we occupy, is any different from anything that we have already seen decades ago, think again. Although, in my opinion, that's made all the more interesting by the fact that, indeed, in the ensuing decades, there have continued to be official inquiries, which even included a report entitled The UFO Enigma, that was actually provided to Congress by the Congressional Research Service. That's right, this was recently reported by George Knapp's Mystery Wire, and I've seen excerpts from this report before, but I'd forgotten entirely about this. That's right, report number 83-205-SPR, written by Marcia S. Smith, who's a specialist in aerospace and telecommunications systems, and also with the Science Policy Research Division of the CRS. She wrote a very lengthy, like an 88-page report, that looked at the UFO phenomenon, and this was provided to Congress. It provides some rather interesting things. They give three definitions for UFOs, which include the U.S. Air Force's version, then Carl Sagan's version, and then, yes, J. Allen Hynek's version. I'll present each of those to you here. According to the Air Force, a UFO is an aerial phenomenon or object which is unknown or appears out of the ordinary to the observer. According to Carl Sagan's definition, he says a UFO is a moving aerial or celestial phenomenon detected visually or by radar, but whose nature is not immediately understood. And then finally, J. Allen Hynek, a UFO is any reported aerial or surface visual sighting or radar return which remains unexplained by conventional means, even after examination by competent persons. As Marcia writes, the most commonly used definition of a UFO is expressed in both the Air Force and the Sagan definitions, and encompasses the vast files of sightings that either have or have not been later identified as natural phenomena. She cites 12,097 between the dates of 1947 and 1967 alone, obviously referencing Blue Book and its predecessors. Hynek's definition, she says, is more precise since it covers only those that, after investigation, still remain unidentified and are thought by some to be spaceships from other worlds. Of those, 697 between 1947 and 1967. And in fact, the footnote there actually cites figures are from the U.S. Air Force Project Blue Book 1968. She goes on to note, since then the term in general use can mean either of the above. One must be careful, though, as to the context in which the term is used. There are naturally thousands upon thousands of reports that could come under the first two definitions, since many people can become confused by natural objects, such as the planets and stars, and other natural phenomena like ball lightning that are not well understood even by scientists. This is interesting. She goes on then to give, for the sake of clarification, additional groups into which sightings could be classified, and these proposed by William Hartman, who was the senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute in Tucson, Arizona. And those are, let's see if you guys have heard of all of these. The first one you'll know, UFO, of course, unidentified flying object, the original sighting, according to the Air Force and Sagan definitions. The next one is IFO, identified flying object, a UFO case that has been completely solved. Most of you guys probably heard that one too, but what about these next two? We have EFO, extraordinary flying object, something beyond the bounds of recognized natural phenomena, and AFO, alien flying object. As she says, the last two are relatively subjective, since those who refuse to speculate on the possibility of Earth being visited by extraterrestrial life will classify all unidentifieds into EFOs. That is, they are extraordinary, but nonetheless unrecognized natural phenomena. And their counterparts on the other side of the question will assume that all unidentifieds are AFOs. That is, alien flying objects. She goes on to say other acronyms have also been suggested, and one that has some support is Anomalistic Observational Phenomena, or AOP. Ever heard of that one? The term was coined by Dr. Robert M. L. Baker, who notes that although some unexplained phenomena may be occurring, it may not be flying, may not always be unidentified, and perhaps may not even be substantive objects. Unfortunately, she says, UFO has become the accepted term, and changing the habits of the masses is no easy chore. Now, that statement really is worth considering, especially in light of what we were discussing earlier, and Professor Don Lincoln's commentary on all of this. You know, let's separate the mental link between extraterrestrial life and UFOs. Again, something I think actually that's not a bad idea at all. But as this Congressional Research Service report on UFOs that was provided to Congress, originally written in the 70s, this is an updated version from the 1980s that can be found online now, and I've got it linked there in the show notes for you if you would like to read it too. It's about 88 pages. You know, there's some interesting stuff in here. If anything, it is another piece of the evolving puzzle in terms of the history of the documentation of this topic. But I mean, as you can see, the report is quite detailed and remarkably well-informed. And no doubt, members of Congress, at least as recently as 1983 or so, must have seen this report. They must have come across this at some point. So there's been plenty of data about the UFO phenomenon, what is known about it, what scientists think about it, what the military knows, that have been made available to members of Congress and other members of government for decades now. And so we have to ask ourselves, really, what is so very different about the current climate? There's really, to me, only one thing that is truly significantly different. And in my opinion, what that is the technology now at the disposal of the military. I mean, arguably, apart from the so-called revelation that the Pentagon had a unit that was examining UFOs, or possible aerospace threats, we should say, as reported by Leslie Kane, Ralph Blumenthal, and Helene Cooper, you know, this definitely had a tremendous cultural impact. But let's not forget that around the time of the release of that article, we also had three pieces of footage released by the government, which also seemed to suggest they had things that they had filmed that they couldn't identify. And they left it at that. We don't know what these things are. They're unidentified. That's it. Or as I said a couple of weeks ago, they are things, and we know little else about them. But the fact that we have footage of these things, whatever they may be, that really maybe is the most significant aspect to all of this, because for the first time we actually have a visual recorded record from military sources that represents what our military says they can identify. And yet, as we have seen in recent weeks, in which I have continued to report on, many scientists, like Seth Shostak and others, remain very unimpressed with this footage. Instead of saying, okay, this may be a unique natural phenomenon, this may be something worthy of study, no, they look at it and say, well, this could be malfunctioning technology. That, or they simply say, I'm unimpressed with it. Show me something that looks better. You gave us the best that you had. Well, that's just not good enough. I need something better than that. I mean, these essentially being the very same sentiments expressed recently by Neil deGrasse Tyson on CNN.
I wish we had better evidence than monochromatic, fuzzy Navy video. You know, if we're being visited by aliens, you know, we upload 6 billion high-resolution color photos and videos to the internet every day. We have unwittingly crowdsourcing the observation of the planet. And I want better evidence than that. And just because you don't know what it is doesn't mean you then know what it is. I'm content to say that's mysterious. I don't know, maybe it's a glitch in the hardware. And if you're going to say, no, it's not a glitch in the hardware, are you really sure? Are you so sure that you're ready to believe that intelligent aliens are coming to visit us and showing up on F-17 fighter pilot video? Is that more likely to you than maybe you missed something in your hardware? So I just, keep looking for the aliens. By the way, And I'm glad the Pentagon had a program to look for lights in the sky that could harm us. Yeah, okay, $700 billion, put a fraction of that to protect us in case any of that is an enemy craft, or even if it's alien. But I'm just saying, my big fear is that the aliens already landed, but they landed during Comic-Con, and then no one noticed them because everybody was dressed.
It would have been easy to miss.
Just like us.
Oh, that's just so funny, Comic-Con. Now look, I like Neil deGrasse Tyson, and unlike a lot of critics, at least he says, hey, I'm glad the Pentagon has a program. I'm glad they're looking at these potential aerial threats. But nonetheless, he still says essentially what so many others continue to say. Well, you've got evidence and you finally have collected stuff. You've got scientific instrumentation that is able to track things that the military says they can't identify. Must be internal reflections. And if you think it's not, how sure about that are you? Again, this seems to be the fallback position that he, Seth Shostak, and many others continue to come back to. To which I simply ask, what about the eyewitness observations? What about the thing that Commander Fravor saw? What about the thing that Alex Dietrich saw? You know, you're forgetting about the fact that there are people, real human beings, people who put their lives at risk in service to our country every single day, who also say they've seen these things and are very concerned about the fact that nobody seems to take it seriously or wants to do anything about it. And again, I think back to Gerald Ford saying, Jalen Hynek is flippant. We need, in fact, the American people deserve a better explanation than swamp gas. And I imagine what might happen if Marco Rubio or if Harry Reid or if somebody else in government or several somebodies for that matter, having received classified briefings, you know, if they say, look, I don't know what this is. I don't know what it represents. There's something. It may be of concern to national security. Neil deGrasse Tyson, Seth Shostak, we need scientists like you looking at this. We need and we value your opinion, but we're going to need you to do a little better than say, I'm not impressed with your fuzzy video. This fuzzy video could represent the best information, some of it, that we have collected on a phenomenon that people have been saying that they've been seeing for decades now. Again, in light of what history has shown us, and the formative experience, or at least the way that Ford's statements might have played a role in the formation of Jalen Hynek's attitudes, it would be interesting to see if ongoing efforts to try and resolve this issue in Washington might not at very least encourage some scientists to look at the problem and to consider it seriously, rather than just dismissing it and making jokes about it in comparisons to Comic-Con. You know, I think that right now, the American people feel very much like they did in 1966. Similar to that era in history, we also have people in Washington who are looking at this, and maybe unlike what we saw resulting from that period in history, maybe right now, there is a window of opportunity for the scientific community to revisit a subject that has languished in an intellectual limbo now for decades. Will they take this opportunity? Will we move forward this time? I certainly hope that we will. All right, that's my final thought for this week's edition of the program. Thanks, as always, to all of you for being here. And as always, this show is produced in Asheville, North Carolina. Our executive producers back at Master Control are Race Hobbs and Warren Breger. News tips are provided by Mark Brady, Janet Fitzgerald, and Adam Olson. Music featured on this show is produced by Caleb Hanks, and other show content for this program is produced every week by the wonderful Lauren Ellis. Special thanks goes out to Chris Hayes, Tyler Pittman, Robin Hobbs, Stephanie Mack, Jason Pintrell, James Waldo, and Matthew Oakley. And I remain yours truly, Micah Hanks. And on behalf of all of us here in the bunker, thanks for listening. And as we await the UAP Task Force report, you guys stay strange out there.